So Friday night, some of you may have noticed it if you're a friend on social media or following me on social media. I posted this on Twitter and Facebook, and because it was on Twitter first, it means I had to fit it within 140 characters. I said, if there is anyone alive or dead you would like to emulate, who is he, she? How are you doing? Do you care? Do you really care? And the reason I posted it was that there are some people who I really care for on social media who I know could answer the first question, that they could say, I would like to emulate so-and-so. They could answer the first question, but I suspect don't spend much time pondering the other three. The how are you doing? Do you care? Do you really care? For instance, as Christians, and this is one of the other gotchas, you ask a Christian what their favorite book is, what are they going to say? The Bible. So that's the other gotchas. Of course, some people posted. I wasn't really asking who the thing was, but a couple Christians said Jesus, and they're right. But often that's kind of the default answer. And it's okay to say, well, other than the Bible, it's such and such. It tells people about you. And to say other than Jesus. But as Christians, we would say Jesus, right? Everybody agree with that? You want to be like Jesus. How are we doing? How are you doing? It's okay, you don't have to admit to me. But my guess is, if we are honest, generally, the answer is not so good. Not so good. Part of it is it is a very high bar to reach, and we will reach it through the Lord's grace and how he changes us in the resurrection. But it's a high bar to reach. So we'll answer with not so good. But then the next question that I asked was, do we care? Do we really care that we're not reaching that bar? Because if we really care that we're not reaching that bar, we would be actively pursuing fixing it, wouldn't we? You don't just say, yeah, I'm doing a lousy job, and then go on to the next thing. You'd say to yourself, I'm doing a lousy job. Lord, help me. Help me change so that I'm more like you. And on social media, ignore Jesus or whoever, on social media, I'm sure there are a lot of people who would choose someone like Jesus, maybe Abraham Lincoln. You name other people. And they could say, I want to be like so-and-so, but they don't actually show it by their actions. And it saddens me, because I think that's part of the reason that we have so much pain and chaos on social media, is that people will say they want to be a certain way and then not actually ponder those other questions that I just mentioned about, are you acting like the way you want to be? And I think a lot of it comes down to, I didn't have it in my notes here, but I think a lot of it comes down to they actually don't care. The fact that they're coming up short doesn't matter, because we get some perverse enjoyment out of being mean to each other. And it does sadden me. Too often, I'll admit it, I sadden me in how I behave. So I don't want to just focus on them, but I look back both in personal but also in social media and say to myself, I've come short. Now, I suspect if we went back, we all climbed into the time machine that Maxwell will build. Will you build a time machine for us, Maxwell? No? You don't know? Let's say Maxwell was able to build a time machine. And it was big enough. Can you make it big enough to fit all of us? Can we have plush seats? Cup holders? Do we want cup holders too? What do we want in this time machine? We want it comfortable. How long is it going to take? Because we might need a big screen TV too. But he builds a time machine, and we go back to Jesus' day, and we ask that first question of the people, the Jews, in Jesus' day. We say, if there is anyone alive or dead you would like to emulate, who is he, she? What do you think some of the names? It wasn't going to be Jesus. Most of the people back then, even when Jesus was active, Moses would be one. Anybody else you can think of? Elijah? Anybody else who's really, really important to the Jews? Abraham. Abraham's the one I was thinking about, but the other ones are really good. Moses would definitely be at the top of the list. But Abraham, if you think about it, even with some of the arguments, you know, children of Abraham, that kind of stuff, Abraham was very, very important. And I think with good reason. Because Abraham was somebody. Abraham, Damien, was somebody worth looking at. Have you talked about Abraham in Bible study? Yeah, he's somebody worth looking up to. And we know that for a fact because if he wasn't, he wouldn't be in that faith chapter we've talked about, Hebrews 11. Let's turn there. Hebrews 11, specifically, Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 9. Hebrews 11, verses 8 through 9. And what we're doing in Bible study right now is looking at some creeds and saying, are they biblical? Same kind of thing. It's easy to make a statement to say Abraham's somebody to look up to. Let's make sure that I'm just not making it up. Hebrews 11, verses 8 and 9. Everybody there? By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. That's kind of scary, isn't it? By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. Now, if those words aren't complimentary enough, I'd love God in the Bible to talk about my faith. In positive terms. He could talk about my faith, but I suspect it wouldn't be in positive terms. I'd love to have it, but if those weren't positive enough, how about, we're going to do three other excerpts from God's Word. You guys have your fingers ready? Ready? James 2. So if you're in Hebrews, next book. Hebrews, James. We're going to look at 2, and we're going to look at verses 21 through 23. I'm not going to say anything. We're going to get through these three sets of verses, and then we'll talk about them. James 2, 21 through 23. Are we there? Was not Abraham our father justified by works when he offered up his son Isaac on the altar? You see that faith was active along with his works, and the faith was completed with his works. Oh, and did I say through 23? I hope I did. Yep. And the scripture was fulfilled that says, Abraham believed God, and it was counted to him as righteousness, and he was called a friend of God. Okay, let's look at the next one. 2 Chronicles, back to the Old Testament, 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles chapter 20. So if you hit Kings, Chronicles is after Kings. 2 Chronicles, and you probably can figure this out, 2 Chronicles is after 1 Chronicles. Yeah. 2 Chronicles, exactly. Go figure, that's convenient. 2 Chronicles chapter 20. We're going to look at verses 5 through 7. 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verses 5 through 7. Wait a couple more seconds. Everybody there? And do me a favor. I try to time it. After service, if I go to the reference and start reading too quickly, just tell me to slow down. It is important you all have time to look it up. And I'll tell you right now, I have to look in the content sometimes too. So don't feel bad if you have to look in the contents. Okay, 2 Chronicles chapter 20, 5 through 7. And Jehoshaphat stood in the assembly of Judah and Jerusalem and the house of the Lord before the new court. And he said, O Lord, God of our fathers, are you not God in heaven? You rule over all the kingdoms of the nations. In your hand are power and might, so that none is able to withstand you. Did you not, our God, drive out the inhabitants of this land before your people Israel and give it forever to the descendants of Abraham, your friend? Okay, one more, then we'll talk about it. Isaiah. So head to your right. Head to your right in the Old Testament until you run into Isaiah. And we're going to look at Isaiah chapter 41, and we're just going to look at one verse, 8. Isaiah 41, 8. Are we there?
Yes.
Okay. But you, Israel, my servant, Jacob, who I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my what?
Friend.
Friend. What did all three of those verses say Abraham was? Whose friend?
God's friend.
Isn't that amazing? And the last one is God directly saying it himself, isn't it? The other two refer, but the last one, God says, Abraham is my friend. Would you like to be called a friend by God?
Oh, yeah.
I see a hand. Yeah, thumbs up, exactly. Thank you, Cisco. Of course we would. I know I would. So, let me ask you this, going back to the first question about emulation. Would you like to be like Abraham? Yep, thumbs up. Look at all the thumbs up from the kids and the adults. I like that. Although they can't hear thumbs up on the internet. So it's good to say yes.
Yes.
Okay, which made, by the way, if you're reading through the Bible, if you've fallen behind, don't give up. It's easy to catch up, okay? I'll tell you right now, it's too early to give up. You can catch up. But on Saturday's reading, it made it all the more of a head-scratcher. And I've read through the Bible. I'm not sure. I haven't counted it, but about half dozen times now. And I'm sure I've read this chapter we're about to talk about otherwise, too. So what we're about to read wasn't a surprise to me, but it's a bit of a head-scratcher given what we just talked about. And let's go ahead and read portions. I'm not going to read the whole thing. We'll read a lot of it. Of Genesis 20. Genesis 20. And let's look together to see how much we might really want to emulate Abraham. Okay, Genesis 20. And we're going to start with verse 1. And as you're reading through the Bible, if you have questions, I can't promise to be able to answer them immediately, but don't hesitate to ask. And also, sometimes my best sermon ideas, and I'm not saying this is a great sermon idea, but my best sermon ideas come from them. So if you run into something, you say, it would be great to hear a sermon about such and such, send me a text message, hit me up on Facebook. No, I don't think anybody here follows me on Twitter, but ping me on Twitter, give me a call, and we'll do it. So 20, we're going to read from 1 through 7. 20, 1 through 7. Abraham and Abimelech. From there, Abraham journeyed toward the territory of Negeb and lived between Kadesh and Shur, and he sojourned to Gerar. And Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister. And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife. Now Abimelech had not approached her. So he said, Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, she is my sister? And she herself said, he is my brother? In the integrity of my heart and innocence of my hands, I have done this. Then God said to him in the dream, yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now then, return this man's wife, for he is a prophet, so that he will pray for you and you shall live. But if you do not return her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours. Okay. So what has happened in the narrative so far? Basically, Abraham's traveling. He stops in Gerar. Then Abraham doesn't admit that Sarah is his wife, and the king takes her. I guess she was quite the looker. God doesn't look kindly on adultery and tells Abimelech in a dream he's going to die. At which point, the king reminds the Lord that both Abraham and Sarah had not mentioned that they were married. And God basically says, yeah, I knew that, but you better return her to Abraham or else. That's where we're at, right? Okay. So let's return to the narrative. We're going to look at verses 8 through 13 and then talk a bit more about it. So Genesis 20, 8 through 13. So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told them all these things. And the men were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what did you see that you did this thing? Abraham said, I did it because I thought there is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, this is the kindness that you must do to me. At every place to which we come, say of me, he is my brother. So now Abimelech says, what the heck, Abraham? Why did you set me up? And Abraham answers, I was scared. And besides, she really is my sister. After we read the first seven verses of chapter 20, I purposely avoided saying Abraham or Sarah had lied because of that half-brother, half-sister technicality. That's why I avoided, if you listen to my words, I didn't say they lied. But, in all honesty, did they lie to Abimelech? Yes, exactly. Pretty easy answer. Even if your words are technically accurate, if you know what a person is really asking, and you allow them to leave with a false perception, you are lying. Kids, this is really important. Everybody listening? Even if the words you tell somebody, so I come to you and I ask you a question. I say, Damien, did you do so and so? And you answer in a way that's technically correct, but you know what I'm asking, and you answer a different question, and you deceive me. Is it lying? Yeah, exactly. It is lying. And who is the father of lies?
Devil.
Exactly, Satan. You can see that in John 8:44, and we've done that. And I can tell you, that is not somebody you want to emulate. And sadly, in this case, Abraham is also somebody you do not want to emulate. God, at least indirectly, you can take a look, we won't do it right now, but at Genesis 12, look at the first three verses. God, at least indirectly, promised Abraham protection. And yet, Abraham said, I lied because I thought there's no fear of God in all this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. In faith, Abraham may have left home, but he definitely had some trust issues beyond that, didn't he? I mean, this is actually the second time he lied and had Sarah lie about their relationship to protect himself. If you go back, we won't right now, but if you go back to Genesis 12, you can see when he did it with Pharaoh. Of course, the good news is, just like we do if we allow God to work on us, Abraham did grow in the Lord, and we see his faith in full bloom two chapters later, and how he was willing to give up his miraculous son. So the good news is, he did grow. Now, on that note, I want to return to the second most important human in Genesis chapter 20. Who is the second most important human in that narrative? It's not Abraham. Who would be the second most important person in that narrative? It begins with A2. In chapter 20, what we read, there are two main characters. Abimelech, right? King Abimelech. If you were going to summarize Abraham's original feelings about Abimelech, what would you say they were? How did Abraham perceive Abimelech?
Scary.
He thought he'd kill him for his wife. He thought he was godless, right? He had no fear of God. So bad that he was... Just think about it. Not only did he feel that he was in fear of God, he thought Abimelech would murder him over what? Lust, right? It's not like... It seems pretty clear to me that Abimelech had other women and stuff. So it's not a case where Abimelech was in dire need of a wife. And actually, technically, it's a bit worse than that, because if you read it, he thought of the whole country that way. Abraham had a very negative perception. Now, let me ask you a follow-up question. Was Abraham right about Abimelech? Was he right? Was Abimelech, did Abimelech fear God? At least when he talked to him, he did. So, ready? I want you guys to say it all loud enough for the internet. Was Abraham correct about Abimelech? Yes or no?
No.
No? Okay, we're going to go with no. Thank you, Augustine, for being the lone voice willing to tell the internet that he was wrong. Now, I'll admit that if you read Genesis 20, it doesn't 100% prove that Abraham was incorrect. Abimelech's righteousness could have been based just to save his skin, basically. That maybe if what had happened had not happened, he would have murdered Abraham. Theoretically, that's possible. But it really does appear that Abraham was wrong. And because of it, Abraham did not give Abimelech a chance to actually act righteously. Instead, assuming the worst. He assumed the worst, didn't give him a chance. I'm not saying that Abraham's fears weren't unwarranted. My guess is they were pretty uncouth people when you hear stories of what happens. But in this situation, who seemed more righteous, God's friend or the king? In this situation, who seemed more righteous, God's friend or the king?
The king.
The king. And I didn't put it in my notes, but another case where I see this is, just read the story of Jonah and look at what Jonah was doing and what the sailors say. Jonah's like, throw me overboard. And they're like, we can't do that kind of stuff. They seem more righteous than God's prophet. So this is not the only case in the Bible where the heathen actually seem closer to God than the man of God. Now let me ask you this. Do you ever do to somebody else what Abraham did? Do you ever do to somebody else what Abraham did? And I'm not specifically talking about lying, although if you have an issue with that, that's one of the, if that's one of your lingering sins, I hope you will conquer it soon. I'm talking about assuming somebody else will do something wrong so you don't even give them an opportunity to do what is right. You assume they're going to do something wrong so you don't give them the opportunity to do what is right, assuming the worst and not allowing them to show their best. Have you done that? You don't have to raise your hand. Just think about it. Have you ever done that? Which brings us to Jesus. And isn't that always a great place to be? Which brings us to Jesus. We're going to join the Lord. He's at the temple teaching a crowd. We're going to look at a single statement that Jesus has in John 7:24 from that exchange with the crowd. So John 7:24. Are you there? John 7:24? We're mostly there. And Maxwell, kudos to you for looking stuff up, dude. I know he's not there, but he's trying, and that's what matters. And kids back there, if you weren't doing some other coloring and stuff, don't trust me. Look it up yourself in the future if you can. Okay, 7:24 says, John 7:24 says, do not judge by appearances, but judge with a right judgment. Judge with a right judgment. Do you agree with Jesus' command? Do you agree with Jesus' command? Because it is a command, right? It's not a suggestion. Jesus doesn't say, hey, by the way, it would be really nice. Just consider this. Think about it a little bit. If it's good for you, it's good for me. Judge rightly. Do you agree with what Jesus said? If you assume someone won't do something right, so you don't give them a chance to... Are you not judging by appearances? If you do that, don't give somebody a chance to do the right thing?
Yep.
And if they would have done the right thing and you don't give them a chance, did you judge with right judgment? 'Cause I'm not saying you're necessarily, that Abraham was wrong. Like I said, it could have been that he would have killed him or whatever. But if you judge that somebody's going to do that, you don't give them a chance, and then they would have done it the right way, are you judging them rightly? No, you're not. And of course, this is the only time that Jesus speaks about judging. Another famous, and this one's often abused one, is advice going back to Matthew chapter 7. Let's look at the first two verses. Matthew 7, verses 1 and 2. Matthew 7, 1 through 2. We're there. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured. It will be measured to you. The part that gets abused a lot is that first verse. Some people claim that means we should never judge. Now, rebutting that is not within the scope of this sermon. But what we read in John 7:24 alone proves that's an incorrect interpretation. We're just to judge rightly. It's not that we're never to judge. We're to judge rightly. Instead, we are supposed to judge fully aware as we judge, as we measure. What's going to happen? That's how we're going to be judged and measured. Not to mention, if you look a little further down that page, we also hear Jesus say these words in verse 12. So whatever you wish that others do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Okay, this one you can tell me because it's not embarrassing me. Has anybody here ever been misjudged? Anybody here ever been misjudged?
Every day.
Every day? I've been misjudged. How did it feel? Even if you can't remember, it felt horrible, right? Has it? Anyone ever assumed you wouldn't do something right, so they didn't give you the opportunity to do so? Yeah, I can't think of a specific incident, but that's happened to me too. Or they just figured. How did that feel? Being judged negatively is never fun. But it is especially horrible when it is wrong, when you would have done something right, if only given a chance. If only given a chance. Now, if you don't like it, why would you do it to other people? Think about that. If you don't like being misjudged, if you don't like somebody assuming you can't do something right or won't do something right, given the chance, why would you do it to other people? And don't forget, you have both a command and a threat from God on top of it. What I am saying in this sermon is, give people a chance. Allow yourself to be pleasantly surprised. Give people a chance. Allow yourself to be pleasantly surprised. Abraham did not give Abimelech a chance. Abraham misjudged Abimelech. Don't emulate Abraham in that respect. Give people a chance. Allow yourself to be pleasantly surprised. But before we wrap up, I then, and you can see proof, I'm not lying about it. Can anybody say what those bold words say? Don't be stupid. I titled this section of the sermon, Don't Be Stupid, because I've asked you to give people a chance, allow yourself to be pleasantly surprised, but don't be stupid about it. As Ronald Reagan said regarding Russia, and I found out yesterday as I was researching it, it was from a Russian proverb, actually. Trust, but verify. Trust, but verify. The same Jesus who told us to judge rightly and to treat others as we want to be treated knew something we should also be aware of. Let's turn to that. John 2, verses 24 through 25. John 2, 24 through 25. So as we're making decisions, we should take this into account. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll go up to verse 23. Now, when he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs that he was doing. So a lot of believers, but notice what it says right after this. But Jesus, on his part, did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people and needed no one to bear witness about man, for he himself knew what was in man. Jesus knew what was in man, what is in us, and it's not good. We can judge rightly that what is inside a man is bad. We can judge rightly that what is inside a man is bad, and we should, in right ways, to protect ourselves and our families against that. Give people a chance. Allow yourself to be pleasantly surprised. But don't walk down a dark alley in a bad part of the city. I'm going to give those muggers a chance to be... Exactly, don't be stupid. Or don't walk down a dark alley in a bad part of your life, especially when the ramifications could hurt others. For instance, I believe God forgives pedophiles, and I am sure that He can change them. But I would never let a pedophile teach our children in church alone. Just wouldn't do it. There are limits. Once again, don't be stupid. Ultimately, instead, be like Jesus, the quintessential second chance giver. He died so that we could have a second, a third, a fourth. You see where this is going, right? Jesus died on the cross to give us a chance. And although it is impossible for God to be surprised, I know I have been pleasantly surprised at what people, given a chance, actually do. Especially when the light of Jesus shines on them, in the light of Jesus changes them. Be like Jesus. Give people a chance. Allow yourself to be pleasantly surprised.